I had gone into, I don't know if I'd mentioned before, I'd gone into the birth wanting to do it natural, wanting to do it unmedicated, I should say. But I wasn't adverse to an epidural. My thought was pain's never really stopped me before. But if the pain gets to a point where it turns into suffering, I would probably get an epidural at that point. And it never did. It never turned into suffering. But I really attribute that to being able to stay in the moment and not getting caught up in that panic because of the lack of control that I had.
Getting pregnant and giving birth are two of the most exciting things you can ever hope to experience in this life. The moment you think you could be pregnant, you're frantically searching for all the best information, which is why you're here today. I'm Stephanie King, and with my many years of experience as a professional childbirth educator, doula, and lover of all things pregnancy, birth, and postpartum, I'm here to make preparing for your birth enjoyable, empowering, and totally easy. Each week, I'll cover different topics, interview professionals, and get into the nitty-gritty birth stories from mamas just like you. And when you're ready for more, you can join me in the My Essential Birth course at myessentialbirth.com, where I take you step by step through exactly how to prepare your mind, body, spirit, and partner for a birth you love. So let's get started. It's time. The My Essential Birth postpartum course is here. Whether you're pregnant, just got baby home, or weeks and months into postpartum, this is the course for you. No more wondering what's normal for your body postpartum, if baby's eating or pooping enough, or how to get a good latch. You now have an all-in-one resource where you can click a topic and get the answer. Learn more at myessentialbirth.com/postpartum and add it onto the My Essential Birth course for even less when you bundle them at checkout. Already in the course? Check your student library and add the course for the same discount. I can't wait to support you on your postpartum journey. All right, it is time for the reviewer of the week. And this one comes from Ken Test. And she says, can't stop recommending. I was planning on winging it for my first birth. Welcome to the club. I did that exact thing. But I am so thankful I didn't. I came across this podcast by chance early on in my first pregnancy and couldn't stop listening and absorbing everything these ladies had to offer. Even though my options are slightly different, being in Australia, I am so grateful to have these birthing tools and knowledge. I managed to have a beautiful unmedicated hospital water birth for my first, despite having to face challenges, including active contractions during early labor. I couldn't have done it without listening to you, Stephanie. I am currently pregnant with my second, due near the end of August, and have turned back in to prepare myself again. Definitely hoping to go unmedicated and know that my body has done it once and can do it again. Awesome. This is so cool. And by the time that this is recorded and done and everything, it sounds like you've already had your baby. So a huge congratulations for that. And for those of you who are just tuning in, I'm so excited that you're here. And I can't wait for you to listen to today's episode as well, because I have another birth story for you, which are certainly, probably, definitely my favorite part of this podcast right now. So without further ado, Melissa, will you take a moment and introduce yourself? Tell us a little about you, your family life, anything that you want to say to people who are listening.
Yes, I'm 32 years old and I have a 10-month-old son named Anthony. I'm a single mother by choice, which means that I chose a donor from a sperm bank. I purchased his donated sperm and I had it inserted into my uterus at a reproductive clinic. I did that 5 times before I became pregnant in February 2022. I'm a big organizer and researcher, and I like to know all the things, and I like to be in control, both of which come into play a lot for my pregnancy and birth story.
That sounds awesome. I'm so excited for you to be able to walk through all that. And I can totally relate to that, like, organized, in control. This is how it's going to go. So tell me a little bit about your pregnancy then. I'm curious, first of all, maybe how that works, like with the whole, I would assume it's similar to, is it in vitro or where they just like take it through the cervix and put it into the uterus?
Yep, through the cervix and into the uterus. They call it IUI, so yes. Not IVF, not quite that far. Okay. It's kind of the step that a lot of single mothers by choice start with. And then if you do enough of those, six or more of those, and those fail, then oftentimes you'll move to IVF. Some women move straight to IVF, but it's much more expensive than the IUIs.
Okay. Well, awesome. That's really cool. So how soon did you know that you were pregnant with the IUI? Because with an IUI, were you having to take shots of progesterone or anything like that? Or was it just wait and see?
I did five, and the first three that I did unmedicated. So I just went in and they inserted the sperm, and then I just waited the 2 weeks. And then I took a pregnancy test on the 2 week mark, and that was kind of and if it was positive, I would have then gone in for the confirmation with the clinic test. I didn't have success for the first three. So the fourth and the fifth, I did do medicated. I did a trigger shot, and I was on a medication called Clomid, which just kind of helps your body produce more hormones, essentially is how I understood it. But it was still that same. I waited the 2 weeks, and then on the 2 week mark, I took a at-home test, and if that was positive, I called in. And went in for an ultrasound and a test there.
Awesome. So how did your pregnancy go? Was it pretty easy going? Did you have some morning sickness? Was there anything like that? And then even on to like the later part of things, did you like have any switch up of providers or gestational diabetes or like anything that was kind of like off?
So I feel like I had a fairly classic pregnancy, up to the third trimester. And then in the third trimester, it got a bit painful and uncomfortable. I had planned for, but the painful part was a bit of a surprise for me. But I'll kind of start a little bit in the first and second trimester, and then I'll get into kind of what happened in the third. In the first trimester, I said it was classic before. I had some morning sickness, nothing really terrible. I only ever threw up once. It was on an airplane when I was 6 weeks pregnant. Great story. And there was only ever one day that I took work off because of the morning sickness. But otherwise, I could mostly just get through it. There's these things called Prego drops, or they're like lozenges, sort of is what I thought of them as. And those helped me a lot. And that mostly just got me through. So nothing terrible. I do remember being super hungry and very tired early on. And then toward the end, only food craving I had was watermelon, anything watermelon, watermelon juice, standard watermelon. And the only food aversion I had was for really fishy smelling foods. The worst was the seaweed snacks, which I had left before. Couldn't eat them at all during the pregnancy. Got a few skin tags on my face, had bleeding gums, nasal congestion from the swelling. Boobs got bigger and heavier. I did have some round ligament pain in my abdomen for a few weeks in the second trimester, had some constipation in the second, a little bit of insomnia. The weird one that I had never heard of before that showed up for just a little bit in the second trimester was like itching all over my body, especially at night. I hadn't ever heard of that one. That was weird. Then I hit the third trimester, and the four things that made that the most uncomfortable trimester for me was severe back aches, rib pain, swelling in my fingers, which kind of pinched the nerves and caused symptoms that were similar to like carpal tunnel syndrome. And then around 37 weeks, my son dropped and I started to have shooting pain down my thighs, probably because like pinched nerves or something. So
were there things that you did?
So I think.
Oh, yeah, I can relate to this. I'm wondering, like, with some of these pains, were there things that you did that helped you to find relief even a little bit?
The back pains, I just had to manage with not sitting too long, using like lumbar support pillows as much as possible, things like that. I traveled abroad during my third trimester, and it was eight or 9 hour flight. And I took my huge, big pregnancy pillow and it just hauls it through the airport with me. And I just wrapped it around myself on that airplane seat, and I did okay. But that, I was super nervous about sitting that long, with the back aches, but, heat, like heating pads sometimes helped. If it got really bad, I would take some Tylenol. But mostly just like managing, I was and trying to prevent as much as possible, but then managing with medication or heat. For the back aches, the rib pain, it really only happened if I usually like I was lying in bed and I would roll over. And that was when I got the rib pain, the shooting rib pain. And so I just was really careful about rolling around and moving when I was lying down. The swelling I just dealt with. I didn't really know what to do with that. And then the same with the shooting pain down the thigh, I just tried to like walk it off and shake my leg out a little bit. So
how tiny are you? Can I ask that?
I'm 5'2", or somewhere between 5'2", 5'3". And I was about 110 pounds when I got pregnant. So
nice. You and I are tiny that way. I love it.
Yeah. And he wasn't very big when he came out. He wasn't a big baby, but he wasn't a small baby either. I'd say average. And I think I carried him well for my size, but it definitely felt some of the strain.
Yeah.
So
for sure. Do you have like a shorter torso, longer torso?
I always feel like I have a shorter torso. So if I sit down and try to do like the touch your toes with your fingers, I feel like my legs always feel like they're a lot longer than my torso because it's much harder for me to get to my toes, feels like. But I don't know for sure. That's my guess.
Okay. I mean, that is just my like blind curiosity over here because I like I know I have a short torso, so then I'm just like my own curiosity for myself. Yes. Okay. So tell me about your providers. So actually, at what point did you start listening to the podcast? Did that have an influence on the provider that you chose? And where did you go searching for providers? Did you interview more than one? That was a lot of questions. So
no, it's okay. I think I can remember most of those.
Sounds good.
And you can let me know after if I missed any. I listened to the podcast. When I first became pregnant, I listened to a lot of like Single Mom by Choice podcasts. And then I would say about halfway through or so, I moved into the pregnancy and birth podcasts. And this podcast was the one that I kind of landed on and stuck to and then started to binge for weeks and weeks. I don't remember if I think I had chosen my OB already by the time I started to binge, because I do know looking back that if I had waited and chosen later, I probably wouldn't have gone with an OB. I probably would have gone with like a birth center rather than the hospital setting. But I did choose a hospital setting. I chose an OBGYN. There were two hospital systems in my state. I picked the one that I was told was better by the people that I knew. And then from there, I just chose the OBGYN based off of patient reviews and who I felt I might get along with the most. Although they did tell me when I went in that it was one of those centers where one of them is on call and they kind of rotate. And so I can see an OB throughout the pregnancy, but it's not guaranteed that they would be the one that would be there for the birth. And actually it did end up that I had some doctor I had never met before at the birth rather than the provider I'd seen the whole pregnancy. But I do think I wouldn't do a hospital again for some various reasons we can talk about later if we want. And I don't remember exactly why I ended up picking it, except that it was a little bit earlier on in my research. And it probably had a lot to do with my support network being pro-hospital and me being a first-time mom.
Yeah, that all makes sense. Totally. It makes me curious then, this provider that you worked with, do you feel like you were on the same page? Did you feel like you're like, okay, we don't agree about this. I'm going to have to stand up for this. What was that experience like for you? And how were they with like your questions and things like that? What was your relationship like?
I thought it was pretty good up until toward the end, up until about 38 or 39 weeks. She answered all the questions that I had asked. And I, I liked all the answers. Hospital did seem like it was a bit more progressive than some of the other ones that I'd heard about in the podcast and from friends. I think it was 39 weeks, if I'm remembering correctly. She wanted to do a membrane sweep. And she kind of startled me with it a little bit because she just kind of, I went in and we did a cervical check, and she said, okay, and you want to do membrane sweep, right? And I don't want to do that actually. And then she kind of got standoffish, it felt to me a little bit. And she said something to the effect of, well, I really want to do it next week at 40 weeks because I don't want to have to induce you. And that got in my head a bit because I really didn't want to be induced. I had heard a lot of stories about induction. And it just seemed, I wanted to do a natural birth if I could. And my research was saying it's much harder to do a natural birth if you're induced. And it made sense to me that if you're forcing your body into something it wasn't actually ready for, then of course it's going to be more painful and take longer. So I was a little bit scared of the induction, and she just seemed like it was if I hit 41 weeks, then it was a fact, and there was no way around it. And that was what she was going to do. And I didn't know how I was going to argue against that with her. And it messed with me for a couple of days and made me really stressed out. And then I kind of had to take a step back and say, I'm not even at my due date yet, and we're already talking about this. So I'm just going to set it aside. I'm not going to worry about it. And then if I do get really close to the 41 weeks, and she's really pushing it, then I'll figure that out at that point. Luckily we didn't get to that point. But I do think that she caused me some stress toward the end, which I think was probably avoidable.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it was unnecessary. Mm-hmm. I also like where you were able to kind of take that in, though, and say, I'm not going to deal with this right now. Like, I recognize that it's there, but I'm going to put it over here and I'll come back to it as needed. Because that's mm-hmm. not just survival. I feel like that is like a safe, good place for a mom to find herself. So I think that was the right way to do it.
Yeah, I just wanted to stay as relaxed as possible toward the end, let my body do what it was going to do. So, just try to set aside what I could that was the stressors.
Yeah, that's smart. Tell me a little bit about your preparation. So you listened to the podcast. Tell me how that assisted you, helped you, what you grabbed from it, what you used from it, including, it sounds like, some of the support that you ended up getting before going into labor.
Yeah, so I mentioned before that I binged the podcast a bit, and I did that because there was such a wealth of information, especially birth stories. That was kind of what I gravitated toward a lot. Helped me understand all the different ways the birth could happen. Being a first time mom, I knew little bits here and there, but being able to just think about all the things and all the ways, it allowed me to be flexible when I wrote my birth plan, for sure. It allowed me to kind of go into the birth thinking, here's what I want, but I can't control what's going to happen. And so I just need to, as long as he's healthy, as long as I'm healthy, here's what I'd like. But the goal of the whole thing is to stay healthy and get him out. So I think that helped my mentality going into it a lot. And I do attribute a lot of that to all of the different stories that I listened to prior to the birth. I do think it also helped me really key into trying that unmedicated birth and believing that I could do it, rather than it just being this challenge that I wanted to do because it was a challenge. It started that way, I think, almost, and moved more into, I don't know if I want to use the word natural, because the other medicated is not unnatural, but it's beautiful in its own way. And women, thousands of women do it all the time. So it really allowed me to key into that. Besides the podcast for preparation, I I read a lot of books. I mentioned earlier, I'm kind of a bit of a researcher. So I read one of the ones that I highly recommend. It was a book called Expecting Better by Emily Oster. And she takes us through the data, the statistics behind the pregnancy, like myths and stuff about deli meat and cat litter boxes and like all that stuff. And she just kind of gives you all the information and all the data and then allows you to make your decision based off of that. And she has her opinions based off of the data, based off of her career. And so that allowed me to relax about the pregnancy early on too. And there was a hypnobirthing book that I read toward the end as well. I just kind of skimmed some of it because I was getting close to the birth and I was tired. I didn't want to read tons at that point, but that was important for me too, because the gist of what I got from what I did read was about as much as you can relaxing into the sensations during birth and not tensing your body, because when you tense your body, you're fighting against your body and that's when you feel pain. And so that was also something that I took with me into the birth and what I feel also helped me.
Yeah, I think it's like a two-part preparation, right? Or I guess there's a couple of parts, but like physical is one, what we're putting into our minds, the stories that we're listening to, and then our own thoughts, the stories that we're telling ourselves, trying to find like peace and comfort and feeling comfortable in our own bodies and in our own ability to do it, especially when we haven't done it before. Like we're like, we have nothing to base this off of to say it's going to be successful. I'm curious, did you happen to do the three exercises that we talk about?
No, I intended on exercising throughout my entire pregnancy, but I had mostly stopped exercising during the pandemic. And then I got pregnant shortly after, and it was hard to start up again from what I felt like was ground zero. And so I just kept pushing it off, and then it never happened.
Yeah. Were there physical things that you were doing during pregnancy at all? Like, maybe like the way that you were sitting, your posture, were you aware of certain things and like how you were holding your body, or like what came up for you that you did focus time and attention on? And then I would ask like the same with the mental piece. Like maybe you had some of those scary things coming in, even when your provider's talking to you, like how did you talk yourself or work yourself through that?
I do feel like I walked more than I probably did before. So I guess I would put that maybe under the
totally
exercise.
Counts. Walking is underrated.
Yeah, I did. Yep, I did. I did do a lot of walking now that I look back on it. I have a standing desk for work. I worked from home the entire pregnancy, which is very nice. And I got this standing desk pretty early on. And toward the end, I didn't use it standing very much because I just was feeling very heavy and tired. But I do remember in the beginning, probably more in the second trimester when I had more energy, I do remember trying to stand as much as I could during meetings and stuff like that. And then the mental side of it, I didn't do this, but I think if I got pregnant again, I would like to do this, is birth affirmations. And on that topic too, on the exercise side, I would love to do yoga.
Yes,
prenatal yoga
is so good.
On my next. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think mentally, I just tried to stay focused on my preparation goals. I had a big list of things I needed and wanted to get done before the birth. You know, things like buying a bigger car, finding a doula, finding a pediatrician, down to really silly things like finish this personal computer project cataloging book thing that I was doing.
Nice.
And mostly I just kind of focused on that. I focused on not trying to stay busy and do my list all the time, but just kind of sit back and do what I wanted to do in the moment. So if I wanted to go watch TV, or if I wanted to do this, or I wanted to do that, I'd kind of been working on that a little bit before the pregnancy, but I really dug into that that relaxation and that just kind of like going with the flow feeling and mentality during the pregnancy, because I knew I wanted as much of that as I could, and then to take as much of it as I could take with me into being a mother.
Yeah, I like that. You had mentioned you at some point hired a doula. So I'd love to know how many weeks you were when that came about. And you also said that there was something within the podcast that encouraged you to do that. So will you talk a little bit about the thought process behind why you chose to do that and at what point you ended up hiring? Also, if you had interviewed more than one, I'm a little curious about that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was about 25 weeks or so, or somewhere between 20 and 25, if I remember correctly, when I was interviewing. And I really only interviewed one, and I only interviewed, it was a team, but I interviewed them and I liked them so much that I never felt the need to interview more. I had heard about doulas before, but I remember hearing through the podcast different mothers who had talked about what a doula does. And not even other mothers. If I remember correctly, there were a couple of episodes that you did yourself about the benefits. And the idea of having someone in the birth, because I'm a single mother by choice, I don't have a partner. I wasn't going to have a partner in the birthing room with me. So I felt like I needed to figure out who was going to be with me, who was going to be the support. I ended up bringing my mom, and she was an integral part of that birth. She was my emotional stability, but she's also my mom. And she has some bias, and she has some, so I wanted to bring someone in that was a third party and didn't have the emotional ties necessarily, because where my mom might watch me and see me suffer potentially and want to help me ease the suffering, a third party person can look at the goals that I set prior through the birth plan and through the conversations I had with them and say, no, you said you wanted this and not that. And they could help me stick to it. I felt better than my family could, because I know my family's got biased and not seeing me suffer. So that was probably the biggest reason why I started to go down the route of the doula. And then just the more I talked to them. And then when I hired them, so I hired the team, and then it was one of those situations where they rotate on call. And so I worked with both of them through the pregnancy. And then just whoever was there when I went into labor was the one that was there in the room with me. I loved what they did.
Yeah, I was going to ask, was there like some preparation work with them? Like, were there things that your doulas recommended or said to you that like really made you feel comfortable and prepared for your birth experience?
Yeah, they came over for an hour or two one time, and we went through a couple of things. But the thing that really stood out to me, one of the things that really stood out to me, was they had a bunch of flashcards. And on one side, it said something like vaginal birth, and the other side said C-section, or something like that. And they gave them to me, and they said something to the effect of pick out 10 things that are important to you. So do you want to be able to move while you're laboring? Do you want continual monitoring or intermittent monitoring, things like that. And so I'd flip and kind of figure out, this thing is super important to me, like non-negotiable, versus this is I wouldn't care one way or another. And then, so I laid out the ones that were important to me, and they took me through those, and we just kind of kept narrowing it down and said, well, actually, like, what if this thing happened? What is this still a non-negotiable? And so what the purpose of that was them helping me be more flexible and think more about being flexible about what's going to happen, and accepting that whatever does happen, that it's going to be okay. And kind of walking into that before I ever walk into the delivery room.
That's funny. It's one of my favorite exercises. We actually do that within the birth course. I haven't heard somebody like mention that outside of it. That's awesome. And it's for that exact reason that I love it so much, because it take that mental preparation of like, no, I had a plan. And then, but having to deal with, but what if something else happens on your plan that's not there? Just the working of that in your mind before you're up against labor, which is unpredictable, I think does a lot for women. So I love that they used that. Okay, yeah. Talk me through your birth experience. How did you, like from that very first contraction, how did you know you were in labor? What did those first contractions feel like? What time of day was it? All of that stuff.
Okay, so I'll take us back just a few weeks before. My due date was supposed to be November 10th. On October 28th, which was like week 38 or so, we did the first cervical check, and I was 2 centimeters dilated and 70% effaced. So they said, oh, your body is doing great. The next week, it was like November 4th, so that was 6 days before due date. I was still 2 centimeters dilated, but I was 90% effaced. And then on the 11th, one day past the due date, I was 3 or 4 centimeters dilated and 100% effaced. And that was incidentally also the day that the doctor wanted to do that membrane sweep again, because I had refused it the week prior. And in between that week, I had done some research and decided it might as well. It won't hurt anything. I was a little bit worried about it being painful. And it was very weird feeling, and it was very uncomfortable, but I don't know if it was painful. Anyways, I let her do the membrane sweep. That was on a Friday, November 11th. The afternoon after the membrane sweep, I started to have some cramping, and it was definitely different cramping than I had had prior in the pregnancy. I'd had Braxton Hicks, since like week 30 or so, but they were mostly painless for me. It was just, I really only noticed them because I could feel the tightening of my abdomen. So the cramping was a bit different. I'd been told the cramping was likely, and it didn't necessarily mean anything, but because it seemed different to me, I told my manager and my employees that day that I was likely to give birth that weekend. And I'd let them know if I wasn't going to be back in on Monday. So I finished workout, finished my day, went to bed. Saturday morning between 1:30 a.m. and 9 o'clock, my sleep was interrupted, I would say like every hour or so, and I would get up and I would empty my bowels. I felt crampy each time I woke up. And I do remember somewhere in the morning, I did start to time the cramps because I just wanted to see. And they were 8 to 10 minutes apart, and they seemed like they were fairly consistent. Lost my mucus plug around 4:30 a.m. But once I lost the mucus plug, I didn't have anything, no cramping, no what might have been contractions, up until about 8:30. So there was like a 4-hour gap there. Still don't know what that was about. Around 9 o'clock, I was sleeping in bed, and I heard, and I felt, and I swear I heard a popping sound from my abdomen, which woke me up really fast. And I remember jumping out of bed thinking that it had to have been my water breaking. but I didn't have any rush of fluid, nothing. But contractions started up again after that. And then 30 minutes later, fluid did start to leak out. My doula later said that she thought it was a high leak and it had just broken up high and then just had to kind of spend time coming down. And my mom thinks that I just slept through most of my early labor that morning. I am a deep sleeper, so who knows? But I would say after that pop, at 9:30 or so, the contractions started to get really intense. Like, it was no longer what I thought might be cramping and clearly what I thought was contractions. And I started timing those, and they were 12 to 15 minutes apart. Just, it didn't seem like it was the same each time, but it was always somewhere in between there, 12 to 15 minutes. But they were intense, and they were intense enough that I was stopping and leaning over stuff, to kind of like,
when you say intense, where was that intensity? Like, if you were describing it to someone and they were going to be feeling it, what do you remember what it felt like?
The best way I can describe it is it kind of felt like a Charlie horse, like pulling me inward into my abdomen. And that's why I kept leaning over, because I felt like it was pulling, like everything was just pulling tight, to my center. And it was just this like huge contraction is a really good word because it just contracted me inward. But it was like a really tight, really like Charlie horse is the best way that I thought about it afterward. So mostly I was texting my mom and my doula throughout this. I was sitting on my birth ball at home and I was just kind of trying to sway. And then I would stop and just kind of lean over my bed when I had a contraction. About an hour after they started, very suddenly they nosedived from 12 to 15 minutes apart to 4 to 5 minutes apart. No transition whatsoever in between. It was just suddenly they were 4 to 5 minutes apart. And I started to leak a lot more fluid. My doula at that point said, seems like it's going to happen today. I'm on my way. My mom started the drive over as well. The plan was to just kind of labor in my house and tell my doula. And I thought it was time to go to the hospital. But my mom showed up and she took one look at my face and she said, "We're going." something in my face that she saw convinced her that I was beyond that point already. So I texted my doula. I told her to meet us there instead. When I got into labor and delivery triage, they said I was 6 centimeters dilated. So they asked if I wanted to walk or be wheelchaired to the delivery room. I chose to walk. I don't know why, but I chose to walk and stopped a couple of times along the way to lean against a wall, but we made it. Met my doula in the hallway. And we all went to the delivery room. I was around, I think I arrived at 11:30-ish in the morning and got into the delivery room at 12:30 p.m. My doula said to me afterwards that she thought they moved me really fast. That was faster than I thought it was just normal, but she said, no, that was pretty fast move. In the delivery room, I remember sitting on the birth ball with my elbows on the bed for basically the rest of active delivery. My doula said she tried to see if I wanted to do other positions or sway or do anything other than sit there. And I said, no, I just wanted to sit there. So that was what felt good to me. But my mom did counter pressure on my hips during the contractions.
Did she like know how to do that naturally or did you prep her for that?
So funny thing was for the majority of my pregnancy, my mom was living abroad in Malaysia for her sabbatical. And so she flew back for a month for my birth. And so I had her on a call with me, with my doulas, but it was through FaceTime. So we never got any like physical having her there and practicing with me. She just kind of watched as my doulas did some of the practice. She did great for not having
That's
really
awesome.
Actually practiced it.
Yeah, very yeah. cool.
Yeah, yeah. I remember my doula at some point had to remind, because they had talked to me before about vocalizing low instead of high, and vocalizing low would help help me ride through the contractions. And I remember in the delivery room, she reminded me of that once because I think I was starting to get panicky and my moans were getting higher. She said, no, bring them down, bring them low. And that did help a little bit. I only cried once and it was when my mom leaned over and told me I was doing a good job. And I don't know what it was about that, but that was the thing. Hormones probably, but talked about the contractions. Charlie horse, I think for me was that it wasn't, I wouldn't call it pain. But I think I say that because it's just not similar to any other pain I've ever felt in my life. It just felt like it was really intense pressure almost, but really involuntary. Like my body was just doing it and I just had to go with my body because it was going to do it with or without me. So I had mentioned when I was at home and they had first started and they were intense, I felt like they were curling me inward. By the time I was in the delivery room, I felt like that had changed. And the thing that helped the most was actually like arching my back and pushing my feet into the ground when the contractions came. And I don't know why that helped, but that seemed to help. And then I would just kind of sit back and rest in between. They tried to get me to pee at some point, but I couldn't. I don't know if he was too low or if there was something else going on, but I hadn't peed for a while and they were a bit concerned about that. But it just wasn't going to happen. They told me later after the birth that I was super quiet during the whole thing. And it seemed like I was really calm, which was really funny to me afterwards because I didn't feel that way. But I think it was because I was so focused on breathing and focusing on my breath. And I kept my eyes closed for almost the majority of the whole labor and delivery, because that helped me focus on my breath rather than being distracted by what I was seeing. And so I just focused on my breath. And so I felt it sounded loud to me in my ears because I was hearing my breathing. But it was louder to me than it was to them. Let's see. So around 2:30, this was about 2 hours after we arrived in the delivery room. My doula told me later, I don't remember this at all, but my doula told me later that I said out loud at some point around that mark, I don't know how much longer I can do this, which made her think that I must be approaching transition. She thought I was around like an 8 centimeter probably at that point. So she asked if I wanted to get in the tub. And I didn't want to stand up and I didn't want to move, but I thought it would probably be a good idea. So I said, yes. When it was full, she came back, she said it was ready. And then I just needed to stand up and walk over to it, which seemed like an insurmountable effort, but I gathered my energy and I stood up. But as soon as I stood up, my body did a pushing motion. I mean, I grunted, and I announced, I'm pushing. It's time. And everyone was super surprised because no one could believe I was ready to push already. It'd only been 2 hours. So I had done like a, well, I was a six. Seven, well, I'm jumping ahead a little bit. Let me back up. So I got onto my knees on the bed, and the bed was like upright, sort of reclined, but I got on my knees and kind of hugged the back of the bed. So I was not quite on all fours, but on my knees. And then they checked me in that position. I was 9.5 centimeters. So I went from a 5 or 6 to a 9 in 2 hours. And so they called the doc. No one was prepared. They called the doctor and they said he needed to get here in a hurry. I remember hearing him come in a bit after that and asking if he had time to get dressed. And they all told me he did. But I thought that was kind of funny afterwards, looking back. At some point they wanted to put an IV in, but they couldn't get it in. I had a huge bruise for weeks afterwards because they just kept poking. They never could get it in, which in the end I was a little bit grateful for it. They told me it was just the saline IV for me afterwards, and maybe it could have helped because I did get quite parched later on, but I had my water and it ended up being fine. So the doctor got dressed, then he came in and he asked me, I was still at a 9.5 by the time he came in, however long that was. And he asked me if I wanted him to flip the last half centimeter over Anthony's head during a contraction. I said, yes. So he did. It was successful. And then I spent the next 2 hours pushing. I did some time on my knees where I was upright and hugging that bed. And then I think my legs must have gotten tired at some point because then I remember moving to my side. My doula says I didn't like those because I didn't stay in it for very long. So I moved from there into an upright seated position, not quite 45 degree angle, but a little bit more upright than that. She said it was similar to a birthing tub position. And I stayed in that position for the rest of the birth. It was definitely a different feeling, the pushing rather than the contractions. And I remember there was some relief that once my body was ready to push, I was like, oh, good, I'm done with the contractions now, and I can move on to this. But it was different, and there was some relief. But then it quickly became this, oh crap, this is even more involuntary. I mentioned before that I like control. And so there was kind of a struggle for me a little bit about knowing and feeling that I was not in control of my body. My body just was doing what it was doing without me. And I could either ride it with it and go with it, or I could fight it. And I knew from the podcast, from that hypnobirthing book, that the more I fought it, the more I tensed up, the more it would hurt. And so I just kept trying to stay focused and relaxed and just ride them out. And if, as soon as my body was ready to push, I just went with it. But I just feel like I was on that fine line the whole time, almost, where if I allowed myself to start thinking about the next contraction or where was I or anything like that, I could very easily have moved into panic, and that could have changed the whole thing. So staying in the moment was super, super important for me. I'd gone into the birth wanting to do it natural, wanting to do it unmedicated, I should say. But I wasn't adverse to an epidural. My thought was, pain's never really stopped me before, but if the pain gets to a point where it turns into suffering, that's the point where I felt like that I would probably get an epidural at that point. But I wanted to see how far I could go before, you know, I didn't want to suffer, but I wasn't afraid of pain. And it never did. It never turned into suffering, but I really attribute that to being able to stay in the moment and not getting caught up in that panic because of the lack of control that I had. So,
yeah, I think what you just said is super important. Actually, there is a difference between pain and suffering, and it is a line that you can cross over during birth. And that's why it's important to know your options. And I do think it's totally, absolutely appropriate to desire and utilize an epidural at that point as well. But I love that you were able to like clarify where that line would have hit for you, and that it was in here. It was a mental thing at that time for you. It was not just a physical thing of being able to stay in the moment. That staying in the moment, and yes, like that's the part of transition where women are out loud, I don't know if I can do this anymore. It's because you're like, how much longer is this going to go on? I can't handle this if. And it's because you're not just right there, I'm taking one contraction at a time and I can only, you know, and that's that reminder that you need. So the clarity around what you just said is like super important. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I do remember there was one point somewhere in there where I did have a thought, and I thought, just go grab the vacuum and pull him out. And that was me like almost crossing that line. And I had to really pull myself back. That was the one time where I was starting to dread the next contraction. And luckily I feel like I caught that and before the next contraction, and just said, no, pull back, you know, and just breathe. And then it just kind of went from there. And I didn't think of that again, but I do remember the one time, which was funny because I had put in my birth plan, I don't want any vacuums, I don't want any forceps. And then in the moment I was like, just get them out.
Yes.
But that was the dread part. And if you can avoid the dread part and avoid the thinking too far ahead, then it was manageable. I would say one of the things that my doula did with me that was really, really helpful was like a tug of war. There was like a scarf or a fabric, and she had one end and I had the other end, and she just pulled and I just pulled. And it really helped me like bear down in the correct way rather than just pushing. They did tell me at some point I wasn't pushing correctly in the beginning. And they said, you got to bear down and out rather than just like everywhere. So the tug of war really helped give me the leverage to bear down.
Will you explain kind of what position you were in, what that looked like for people who are listening so they can visualize that?
Yeah, definitely. So I was in kind of that upright position. I was sort of sitting on the bed. It was one of those, like they have the horizontal side of the bed and then some lip or something that I was sitting on. So my legs were kind of like squatted almost in front of me. Or maybe there were stirrups. I can't remember exactly. I might've had my feet in stirrups, but I was like squatted, but kind of reclined squatted a little bit. And so she stood in between my open legs, holding the scarf, and then I held them. And so she was pulling it downward, I think, toward my abdomen. And so I was, something about the position of how she was holding it allowed me to to just like pull, and me pulling allowed me to
engage those muscles,
visualize that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. The doctor came in at some point again and sat in between my legs because he thought I was close enough that he wanted to be there. And so when he did that, and Sharina was my doula, could no longer be in between my legs anymore. She kind of stood off to the side, kind of crowded into him. And her and the nurses both took a side, and they pushed against my feet, and I pulled against my thighs. And that pushing against me was also good leverage for me to just like the resistance of pushing against their pushing allowed me to bear down really well as well. Let's see. I eventually could feel pressure. What I felt like, it felt like my cervix or my opening or whatever just kept getting more pressure on it. This was very likely him crowning. And they did tell me he crowned slowly and for a long time. And so that was really reassuring for me as we got toward the end, because every time I pushed, the pressure got more, and that felt, I could kind of visualize in my head that every push kind of like pushed him down and stretched the opening a little bit more and more and more. And then eventually, you know, it stretched to a point where he could fit out. It felt like that took a long time. It felt like he crowned forever. But at least I felt progress, which kept me going on that side. They asked me at some point if I wanted to reach down and touch his head, and I said no. And I kind of regret not doing that now, but in the moment, I think I thought that it would break me out of my, like, in the moment concentration. If I touched it, it would become real, and that might be too much, and that might push me over into where I wasn't, and I need to stay where I was. I didn't have any monitors on. So between pushes, they checked his heartbeat. There was never a time that he went into distress. Luckily, toward the end, when he was crowning and probably feeling the most squished, they did say he dipped a little bit, but it wasn't abnormal. Eventually his head came out, and then another push had the rest of him out. He was wrapped up in the core, so they unwrapped him, and put him on me immediately. And that was the second time I cried. It was one of the most surreal moments of my life. I'm already getting emotional about it again. He was such an abstract thought before, and I knew he was coming, but I couldn't prepare for how it would feel to have a little human being put on my chest and know that I just pushed him out, and that he'd pushed himself out, and now he was mine to care for. Gosh, I didn't think that would get to me, but it was the most surreal thing in my life. They delayed the clamping, which I had asked for. And the nurses rubbed Anthony's back and sucked fluid out of his mouth. I had second degree tearing, but I didn't feel anything. My bladder was super full, they said, so they drained my bladder because I hadn't been able to pee before. They got the placenta out really easy, and they stitched me up. And I didn't feel any of this, really. I remember a little bit of a weird feeling when the placenta came out. They said it was a big placenta. But anyways, he was born at 4:35 p.m., so it was about like 5 hours in the hospital. They said it was a super quick birth for a first-time mom. I cut the umbilical cord blood, not the blood, the umbilical cord. That was something that I had requested. I didn't have a partner to do it. I wanted to be the one to sever that connection. It's one of my favorite photos I have of the birth. It was really powerful to be able to do that. So in the end, compared to my birth plan, the actual birth actually matched up fairly well. But I chalk a lot of that up to luck, and that mentality stuff that we were talking about earlier about being able to stay in that moment. I think that was the key to being able to do it unmedicated. I don't know the timing for the epidural, if that would even have been an option. I assume it would have been an option for me. But with it being as quick as it was, I wasn't sure, but I was able to do it unmedicated. I had been prepared to be flexible, but I was hoping to have a natural and intuitive. That intuitive was important to me. I wanted to be intuitive because I wanted to just kind of, I knew my body knew what it was going to do. There were times in the beginning when I was pregnant, because I'm so small, that I had some anxiety about being able to do a vaginal birth. But I kept being reassured beforehand that the body knows what it's going to do and everything just stretches the way it needs to. And I, at some point in my pregnancy, I just kind of was able to accept that and say, it's just going to do what it's going to do. And women smaller than me have given birth successfully vaginally. And so I just need to not worry about it. And so I stopped worrying about it. And it never got to a point where I became anxious about it during the birth either. It was a very good birth overall. And my pregnancy was really good. I loved being pregnant despite all the pain and uncomfortableness in the third trimester. I wanted to be pregnant before I even wanted kids. So I feel lucky that I got a good pregnancy. And I feel lucky that I had a good birth, and that I had no complications, and that complications could have changed so many things. There was one point in the pregnancy where they checked my blood pressure and it seemed a bit high. And I got a little bit worried at that point. But other than that, I passed all my glucose tests just fine. All the ultrasounds were really good. I just feel really, really lucky with how it all ended up.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. Even as you were talking and you were saying, I had some of these anxieties and this is how I dealt with it, I'm like, you did do birth affirmations. You just didn't call it that. Like, that's exactly what you were doing. Like, it's going to be okay. Women have done this before. But like, that's like that self-talk that you need. That's awesome. I love it. I love to end these episodes, these birth story episodes, with like your very best advice for other moms that are listening. So with that in mind, what would you say to the many, many hundreds of thousands of women listening today that you think would be so beneficial and useful for them to know?
I have two important things postpartum, if we have time for them. But birth related wise, what really worked for me and what I really think will work for a lot of women, if you don't have complications, and maybe even if you do, is just being able to have that mentality of staying in the moment, not passing that threshold of panic. If you can stay away from that, and you can stay away from from tensing up, if you can stay as relaxed and just kind of ride through everything with your body knows what it's doing. Your baby knows what they're doing. If you just trust that, then it makes all the difference. It really made all the difference for me. Postpartum, I had a really difficult first week postpartum because my son had a bunch of mouth ties. He had a lip tie, a tongue tie, and two cheek ties. He couldn't really use his tongue at all. He couldn't suck properly. So he breastfed constantly, hardly slept. So I hardly slept. I think I got like 15 hours of sleep the first 4 or 5 days. And I had a lactation consultant come to my house on day 4, and she concluded that he was only getting a third of what he needed at each breastfeeding session, and that he was using his jaw and his lips to suck instead of his tongue, which meant he was working harder for it too. So he lost a ton of weight. He got, it was scary to watch, and my supply was decreasing as well because he wasn't pulling enough. So I started to supplement with formula feeding, and the lactation consultant came and diagnosed the mouth ties and said, if I wanted to continue to breastfeed, I'd have to triple feed, formula, breastfeed, and pump. And I said, nope, not doing it. And so I moved full time to formula feeding, and he did really well with that, but he still couldn't feed. He still couldn't cup his tongue. He still couldn't feed efficiently. He was taking 40 minutes to an hour to feed. So we still weren't getting much sleep. So it was a hard decision to decide to do the release surgery on him, because I knew I would be putting him through pain to do it. But my advice is, if you have a child that's got severe mouth ties like that, do it anyways. Because it took him a few weeks afterwards to relearn how to feed. But once he did, everything changed. It was night and day. And, it was clearly painful for him that first week, but Tylenol got him through. We did mouth exercises to make sure that the cuts didn't reattach tighter the wrong way. And we got through it. And I don't regret the decision. It was a hard one, but it was a necessary one. And so that's my advice for any mother. I know releases are kind of a new thing and we're doing it a lot more these days. But I really do think it's a difference between how the severity of the mouth tie is. And if you have a severe mouth tie, don't wait, just do it. And then my other one is for the moms. I had some bad tailbone pain post-birth and I let it go for months without really addressing it. By the time I finally went to a chiropractor about it, she said my tailbone was fine, but that my pelvis was twisted and tilted off alignment because of the birth. And so she adjusted it back and that helped a bit, but didn't really fix it. And so then a pelvic floor therapist took a look. They said I might have hyperlordosis, which is the curving inward of the spine. And she said that that could have been the way I carried. It just put it, and that would explain all the back aches too, is that I just carried forward a lot and that it kind of like pushed strain because my spine was coming inward to kind of help hold everything. I'm still dealing with the tailbone pain. And so my advice is don't wait. If something feels off or wrong or something hurts, just go in and get it looked at. I feel like if I had gone and it looked at earlier, then I could have, I wouldn't be in that. Like I still have pain if I sit on a hard surface for too long. So I'm 10 months in. And I feel like this could have been resolved much earlier if I had just gone in and had someone take a look. So that's my advice. Don't sit on any pain for too long. I know we're all busy with newborns, but make it a priority. I guess those three things, the mentality during birth, don't sit on your pain if you have any after birth. It's not, same with breastfeeding. If breastfeeding hurts, then something's not going right. And get it looked at. Don't just let it go on because you think that you need to, or you should. And then if mothers have children with severe tongue ties, please just take a look at that release. It's worth it.
Yeah, I hope one of the benefits I think of being able to talk about these things on the podcast or something like that, where other women can come in and listen to that, is to understand, just like you said, that there's other practitioners to go to that can help and support with those things. Because imagine if you didn't see your OB for the next 6 weeks, you know, there's so much that happens in that first week and those first couple of days and those 6 weeks that can be very serious and resolved with knowing, like right now, if you are listening, go make sure that you have a list of practitioners in your area that you can turn to, that you've looked into or that have been provided for you. That can help with some of these things. You mentioned lactation consultant, pelvic floor therapist, chiropractor. These are all people, doula. These are all people that should be on that list. And that's whether or not you're part of a Facebook group for birth or postpartum or for doulas or moms groups or a crunchy group. All of those things can be dealt with before, because when you're in the thick of it, the last thing you want to be doing is, you know, you're just going to be too stressed to really be thinking about it at all if it's not something that's already in your brain, or if you don't have a doula to reach out to and say, hey, I'm having this and this, like, what do you recommend? So that's really good advice. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'll say that my doula was the one that recommended me to a lot of those different practitioners. It was just invaluable. I would have felt better walking into it if I'd had a list prior. And so because I didn't, I ended up going through that stress of, can I text her? Should I text her? Can, you know, like all this, rather than just having the information there with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Great advice. Well, thank you, Melissa. Thank you for being here today, for your birth story, for your excellent advice, and for all the power that you have just shared with these many women. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Stephanie.
If you loved what you heard today, the very best way to support this podcast and help other moms to find it is to leave a quick review. I read one at the beginning of the episodes, and I would love for yours to be next. And if you're ready for even more pregnancy, birth, and postpartum goodness, come join me in the My Essential Birth course at myessentialbirth.com, where I will hold your hand and walk you through pregnancy and birth step by step so you're totally prepared for a birth you'll love. See you next week.